Thanks for listening to us on the Jefferson Exchange today. We're always glad when you're here. And if you'd like to join our conversations, feel free. Phone numbers are as follows. Anywhere in the listening area, 800-838-3760. In the Rogue Valley, our local number, 541-552-6782. Or by email, jx@jeffnet.org. The Kyron Horman story does not seem to stay out of the news for very long. Kyron himself has not been seen since June of 2010 at his elementary school in the Portland area. He was 7 years old at the time. Kyron lived with his father and stepmother. His mother lived then and still lives in the Rogue Valley. Desiree Young kept up hope and kept up the pressure since Kyron vanished. She joins us today for the first time to talk about then and now. Desiree Young, thanks so much for joining us here in the Exchange.
Thank you for covering Kyron's case.
What did you think when you first got those calls back in June of 2010? Was there a theory that popped into your mind right off the bat?
Yeah, right away I felt like Terry's story wasn't jiving. She was lying to me about
Terry
the
Horman,
school.
Terry Horman, your ex-husband's
yes.
second wife.
Yeah, so Kyron's stepmom. Her story just wasn't lining up. My gut was telling me that something was wrong, very seriously wrong.
The search for clues right after he vanished was massive. I know some people have described it as one of the largest searches in the history of the state of Oregon.
It is, yes. They brought in, I believe, somewhere in the neighborhood of 17 different agencies. We had the FBI there, as well as a ton of local agencies there from the Portland area, as well as Southern Oregon, because of my husband, Tony Young, his connection with law enforcement. They brought everybody into it, and they had probably 350 search and rescue people on the ground that first night looking for Kyron. So it was extremely large right from the beginning.
In hindsight, is there anything you wish had been done at that time that wasn't done?
You know, honestly, I feel like law enforcement has done an incredible job. I've reviewed a lot of different cases, spoken to law enforcement at trainings and things of that nature, been involved with Amber Alert. And I truly have not seen a case that has been this thorough and initiated as well as Kyron's case. It could have gone bad from the very beginning just based on the jurisdiction question of, was Portland Police Bureau going to handle it or Multnomah County Sheriff's Office? And they did it right from the beginning, and they dispatched everybody to the scene. So I applaud them for that, and I so far have been extremely happy with everything they've done. Obviously, 3+ years later, I am a little disappointed with the progress that we haven't made, mostly, you know, bringing Terry Horman accountable for her actions and proceeding with that avenue.
All right. So let's talk about the whole Kane and Terry thing, because it was within 3 weeks, I believe, that that Kane Horman filed for divorce from Terry Horman.
Yes.
And she moved out of the house, leaving an infant daughter behind.
Yes.
And yet it seems like it's just been one court proceeding and one, not one lawyer, but one set of lawyers after another through the whole process.
Yes. Unfortunately, when you involve attorneys, it has a tendency to get, I guess you said it right, there's layers upon layers. And it has been mostly court proceedings. No charges have been brought against Terry yet, and she hasn't been officially named a suspect, although Judge Cantor did very candidly say that she is a suspect. Law enforcement hasn't come out publicly and said she's a suspect.
All right. You say no charges against Terry yet. So you're confident that someday Terry Horman will be called to account for the disappearance of Kyron?
Yes. I'm very confident that will happen.
So what theory do you have at this point about what has happened to Kyron?
You know, the other day when we were on the Dr. Phil show, you know, Kane had mentioned that we haven't gotten any evidence to say either way, but truly... we have. And Terry has put everything in writing, and she has said very clearly how she felt about Kyron and that she hated him and that she could harm him and that she wanted to harm him. And the problem with that is it kind of steers us one direction. I still believe and will always hope that Kyron is still with us and that he's being stashed somewhere. I just don't feel like that would be what she would have done, because that would have left too many people to talk and tell her story. I think when you start inviting other people to get involved, that compromises your situation greatly.
How have you maintained over the last 3.5 years? How do you keep going with this absence?
The quiet times are the hardest. You know, all the noises in the house that have always been there, those are the things I miss. But I stay focused on the mission, and my will to find this answer and to get Kyren home is greater than Terry's will. And so that's my mission, and that's what I hold on to, and that's what gets me by every day.
Desiree Young is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She's Kyren Horman's mother. If you know the Kyren Horman case, Kyren disappeared from an elementary school in Portland in June of 2010, has not been seen since. He was 7 years old at the time. You can join us on the Exchange. You might have questions or comments for Desiree. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. This has been all over the national media. You just mentioned being on the Dr. Phil show recently. Since pretty much within a few weeks of Kyren's disappearance, what's it been like that to go through this process of telling the story over and over and over?
You know, if you were to have known me before, you know, 3+ years ago, you would know that I'm not the outgoing type to broadcast my life on the media or anything of that nature. It's a really odd dynamic to be thrust into, to suddenly have this fear of your son actually being on the cameras, being on the TV, and having to share everything about your life. It's really odd, but at the same time, the fear of having it not be covered is greater than the fear of not sharing something, or the possibility that if you don't share something, it might not get solved. Or, you know, it's just a weird feeling to have, and then to be thrust into handling interviews and things of that nature when that's not your strong suit. Kyren's shy, and he takes after me, and I had to really figure this out real quick. And I think through trial and error, you know, sometimes you fail and you learn from that. So
has there been much buoyance from the fact that people have really taken such an interest in the Kyren case and have really said nice things to you and offered to help in whatever way they can?
Yeah, I think truly in a situation like this, unfortunately, what ends up happening is people need to identify with you for them to really feel passionately about the cause. And I think because we are such normal people, so to speak, I hate to use that term, but we are the average people. And this is really unusual for this to happen. And it just strikes people. It makes them think, this could be my child. This could be our life. And it's really unfortunate to be in this experience, but we do have that power to influence other people and how they handle the safety from their own lives.
I went back and looked at the timeline on Kyren's case, and even in July of 2010, so just a few weeks after Kyren was last seen, police said they're making progress. So it seems like there have been a number of false hopes along the way.
Well, and, you know, honestly, it has been progress. It doesn't seem like it to the general public and people looking in, but there has been a lot of progress. And maybe we haven't found Kyren yet, but we have a lot of circumstantial evidence tying Terry to Kyren's disappearance. And we are 150% confident that Terry's the person that we're, you know, needing to bring in and charge. And that's not the issue. It's, you know, being able to not make the same mistake that we did with Casey Anthony and Kaylee's case. It's extremely important to have the child first before charging the suspect.
There was another search for clues, seems like in mid to late August.
Yes, late August. And I brought in 10 dog teams, two nonprofit organizations, Class Kids, as well as Canine Forensics from New Mexico. We had about 65 volunteers helping us on each day. And we searched about 15 key areas based on some information that I had and just my gut feelings overall as a mother. We searched those areas so that we could at least, if not find Kyren or find evidence, we could at least rule them out.
Areas near the school, near the home, both?
In the Skyline community and, yeah, near both areas.
Mm-hmm. And there was a statement from you at the time that there were some interesting things found. There were
Yes.
some discoveries?
Yeah, we did find two pieces of possible evidence that are connected to Terry. We can't divulge what those are. They're considered what we call holdback items or items that we don't divulge the description of. But those are being investigated and looked at and checked for DNA and all of those things through the law enforcement that picked it up.
So it's a little hard to keep track of all the court stuff. I mean, a lot of it centers around the divorce proceedings between your ex-husband and his estranged wife. So this is Kane and Terry. So, and then is there also a suit that you have filed as well?
I filed a civil suit at the two-year mark. Unfortunately, we had to dismiss that as of June this year because law enforcement, the DA's office specifically, would not turn over their file.
And that seems to be an ongoing thing. We're between the divorce proceedings, the civil suit, the criminal case, the search, that there are just so many layers of things. Well, this person can't say this because of this,
yeah,
which must be frustrating.
Oh, it's extremely frustrating. You know, I mentioned it on the Dr. Phil show. What's so frustrating is that our world has come to the point where Kyren's rights no longer are more important than Terry's rights and her right to plead the Fifth Amendment. It's frustrating and we can't get answers. We have to go a different route. But that doesn't mean that I'm going to give up.
So what is going on? There's still the website, right? And how
yep.
often do you get contacts from people? It sounds like the case is certainly fresh enough in people's minds that they're still
yes.
interested.
Yeah. Fortunately, we've had so much coverage on Kyren and people feel so passionately about this. And I think because it was his school that he went missing from and or the last place he was seen, this really hits close to home for people. And so I think the interest is there, and I hope that it stays that way, at least until we can bring him home.
So assume, and I know a lot of people do want to help in cases like this. So
yes.
where should they go? What should they do?
You know, if they ever want to contact me, I'm always available. Desiree Young, 424@live.com. They can email me, ask me questions if they want to help, volunteer, whatever. A lot of the things that my family and our local area Kyren supporters do are, you know, in the forms of searches. We don't do a lot of fundraisers for Kyren. We like to give those things out for free. But we do always ask for volunteers if we want to do a search. We are going to be more active in the Roseburg area, getting Kyren flyers out there and
that's
signs.
That's where Terry Horman lives now, right?
Yes, mm-hmm. that's where she lives now. And we just need to keep the pressure on Terry. So I'm always welcome to feedback if people want to email me and give me thoughts, prayers, whatever they want. I'm always open to that. And then, you know, of course, Missing Kyren Horman on Facebook is manned by Kyren's family. And that's always a great place for resources and or to contact us, too.
Okay. And also there's a bringkyrenhome.org?
Yes, that's Kane's website. And he runs the fundraising end of this and getting T-shirts and bracelets and buttons and things for Kyren.
All right. Desiree Young, never most pleasant circumstances in which to talk to you, but best of luck as you continue your search for Kyren.
Thank you very much.
Desiree Young, our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. It's getting close to the bottom of the hour. Vents Day next. Here is Garrison Keillor.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 18th of September, 2013. The birthday of Samuel Johnson, Litchfield, England, 1709, When he was 26, he married a widow who was 20 years his senior. An intelligent woman, he decided, and around the same time, he also started writing. He wrote essays, he wrote a play. His most productive period was his 40s. He wrote 200 essays for the newspaper The Rambler, and he wrote his Dictionary of the English Language. And in his 50s, he met young James Boswell, who was 22, who followed him around, took notes, and later wrote the biography, The Life of Samuel Johnson, which made Samuel Johnson one of the most quoted authors in the English language. Johnson said, "Patriotism is the last refuge of a scoundrel." He said, "When a man is tired of London, he is tired of life." And he said, "A decent provision for the poor is the true test of civilization." It's the birthday of the French physicist Jean-Bernard Léon Foucault, born in Paris, 1819, took the first clear photograph of the sun, helped develop a technique for measuring the velocity of light with accuracy, and is best known for his pendulum, Foucault's pendulum, that demonstrated the Earth's rotation. It was on this day, 1851, the first edition of the New York Times was published in a little office just off Wall Street, founded by Henry Raymond and George Jones, who wanted to put out a serious paper, not a tabloid. And it was on this day, 1837, that Charles Louis Tiffany opened a stationery and fancy goods emporium on Broadway, New York City, which became Tiffany and Company. Here's a poem for today by Bert Kimmelman, Old Age Home. The ride from Manhattan, slipping her into the passenger seat, swinging in her legs, shutting the door, to the suburbs of New Jersey, its trees and freshly painted houses, was as neat as her empty apartment. We placed some photos on her table, hung up a few paintings on the walls, arranged some of her sculptures here and there, plugged in lamps and the television set. We made our way along the hallway to a room full of sun where people were gathered to talk a little, though she had nothing to say. There was a stereo playing music, and once in a while someone sang the lyrics, which had returned from some dim region. A man seated in an easy chair had wanted years ago a girl just like the girl who married dear old Dad. We went to dinner. Someone poured her a glass of juice. She ate, spilling food with a sudden hunger. Afterward, we sat on some couches. Someone asked her to dance. The music played. She danced with slight, tentative steps, a tulip too heavy for its stem. When we had to go, we kissed goodnight and left her to lie down in her soft bed, her head on her pillow, to slip into sleep. The poem Old Age Home by Bert Kimmelman from his collection Gradually the World, New and Selected Poems, published by Blaise Vox Books and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. And by LendingTree, where you can fill out one form and receive up to 5 loan offers at trylendingtree.com, NMLS1136. Engineered by Noah Smith and produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.